What's up, everybody? Welcome back to FKN Crypto. Today, we're going to talk about Ethereum, and to quote Max Keiser, Ethereum is centralized garbage. Stay tuned. Today, we're going to be talking about Ethereum, and while there are many people out there believing that Ethereum is some sort of amazing transformational technology, I'm here to explain to you why it is the exact opposite. So before we get started, let's hear it from the creator of Ethereum itself, Vitalik Buterin, and his take on what Ethereum is.
Thanks to the power of modern communication, we have the ability to create technologies that are decentralized, removing middlemen and allowing users to interact with each other directly through a global network. Decentralized applications have been becoming more and more important in the past 10 years and have the benefits of massively reducing costs and barriers to entry, removing single points of failure, preventing censorship, and ensuring transparency and trust between all the parties involved in an interaction. BitTorrent, a file-sharing network developed in the early 2000s, is arguably the first decentralized application to have been created. BitTorrent allows anyone to share any kind of file with anyone else in the world, allowing people to distribute content quickly and easily, even if they do not have the resources to pay for their own website or server. 5 years later, Satoshi Nakamoto came up with the idea of a blockchain, a sort of distributed database, and used it to build Bitcoin, the world's first decentralized currency. Decentralized currencies like Bitcoin allow people to send money instantly anywhere around the world with no regard for national borders with negligible fees. Bitcoin is increasingly being used for international remittances, micropayments, and commerce online. Decentralized applications for finance, cloud computing, messaging, and distributed governance are soon to come. Ethereum is a platform that is specifically designed for people to build these kinds of decentralized applications, or dApps for short. The Ethereum client, which we are calling the Ether browser, will include a built-in peer-to-peer network for sending messages, and a generalized blockchain with a built-in programming language, allowing people to use the blockchain for any kind of decentralized application that they want to create. Ethereum can be used to build financial applications that are fully trustworthy and transparent because they run on the blockchain, online cryptographically secure systems for managing your property and contracts, social networking and messaging systems that allow users to maintain control of their own data, systems for trading underutilized computational resources like CPU time and hard drive space, and eventually tools for online voting and distributed governance. And the most exciting applications of Ethereum are probably the ones that we have not even thought of.
Before we dive into my criticisms of Ethereum, once again I thought the best place to start would be at the beginning with the Ethereum white paper. Now, a couple things really kind of surprised me as I was going through this. And the biggest takeaway that I got from it was that Vitalik, in his creation of Ethereum, really kind of missed the point as to what Bitcoin was all about. Bitcoin, once again, was about removing third parties. It was about stopping financial censorship. Financial censorship is something that seems to be a concern of Vitalik's. As you'll see, he has very little regard for the fundamental principles of cryptocurrency. So let's get started with the Ethereum white paper. I'm only going to go into the abstract, the opening paragraph, so you can kind of get an idea of what Vitalik is trying to do. Ethereum, a next generation smart contract and decentralized application platform. Satoshi Nakamoto's development of Bitcoin in 2009 has often been hailed as a radical development in money and currency, being the first example of a digital asset which simultaneously has no backing or intrinsic value, and no centralized issuer or controller. However, another arguably more important part of the Bitcoin experiment is the underlying blockchain technology as a tool of distributed consensus, and attention is rapidly starting to shift to this other aspect of Bitcoin. Commonly cited alternative applications of blockchain technology include using on-blockchain digital assets to represent custom currencies and financial instruments, colored coins, the ownership of an underlying physical device, smart property, non-fungible assets such as domain names, Namecoin, as well as more complex applications involving having digital assets being directly controlled by a piece of code implementing arbitrary rules, smart contracts, or even blockchain-based decentralized autonomous organizations, DAOs. The Ethereum blockchain intends to provide a blockchain with built-in, fully-fledged, Turing-complete programming language that can be used to create contracts that can be used to encode arbitrary state transition functions, allowing users to create any of the systems described above, as well as many others that we have not yet imagined, simply by writing up the logic in a few lines of code. The major takeaway from the Ethereum white paper is that at no time does Vitalik claim that Ethereum is a cryptocurrency. It's a next-generation smart contract and decentralized application platform. It's a very, very important distinction. The primary use case for Ethereum is to allow developers to create their own cryptocurrency on the back of the Ethereum network. That has caused a flood of completely worthless garbage coins into the cryptocurrency ecosystem, and along with it has brought much criticism that cryptocurrencies are a pump and dump scheme. You can lie the blame for this completely at the feet of Vitalik Buterin.
Well, I first got into the crypto space back when it was just called the Bitcoin space around 2011. I heard about Bitcoin in a couple of places. I thought it was something really interesting. I started getting into the community more and more. I co-founded Bitcoin Magazine, which was this kind of online site, and eventually a print magazine that talked about Bitcoin-related technical, social, economic, whatever topics. And I did a lot of Bitcoin-related things for about 2 years, eventually dropped out of university to join the space full-time. And soon after that, I started to realize that there were a lot more interesting things that you could do with blockchains than just a single peer-to-peer currency. And this was something a lot of other people were starting to recognize at the same time. And I came up with the idea behind Ethereum, this idea of a blockchain with a built-in programming language as kind of what I thought was the simplest and kind of most logical way to actually build a platform that can be used for many more kinds of applications.
The biggest problem with Ethereum is that it really violates the definition of cryptocurrency. Let me go ahead and read to you the Merriam-Webster definition of cryptocurrency. Any form of currency that only exists digitally, that usually has no central issuing or regulating authority, but instead uses a decentralized system to record transactions and manage the issuance of new units, and that relies on cryptography to prevent counterfeiting and fraudulent transactions. As you shall see as we go through this presentation, Ethereum is not a cryptocurrency. It is not decentralized. It is fundamentally a company. And that is the problem with the vast majority of alleged cryptocurrencies out there on the market, is that they are controlled by a central authority, usually the developers and the organization they form to handle the management of that cryptocurrency. Bitcoin is the only exception. I'd like to go ahead and cite this article from Cryptopedia on Ethereum's role in the ICO boom. Though the majority of ICOs have taken place on Ethereum, the first ICO MasterCoin took place on the Bitcoin network. In 2013, the MasterCoin team aimed to create a layer 2 protocol on Bitcoin that would enable the issuance of new cryptocurrencies. The project embarked on a month-long fundraiser in which anyone could purchase MasterCoin by sending Bitcoin to the MasterCoin Exodus Bitcoin address. If you sent one Bitcoin to the address, you would receive 100 MasterCoin, plus an additional 10 MasterCoin per week until the end of the sale. The MasterCoin sale resulted in more than 5,120 Bitcoin, which was worth approximately $500,000 at the time. Ethereum was also originally funded through an ICO, which took place in 2014. Buyers received Ether in exchange for Bitcoin, and more than 7 million Ether was sold in the first 12 hours of the sale, worth approximately $2.2 million. By the end of the sale, more than 50 million Ether was sold, amounting to about $17.3 million. Controversially at the time, 9.9% of this Ether was set aside for Ethereum's founding team, and an additional 9.9% was allocated to the nonprofit Ethereum Foundation. This feature, which is sometimes referred to as a pre-mine, was adopted by many later ICOs. Ethereum's open-ended smart contract protocol enables developers to create new derivative tokens and platforms with relative ease, as well as execute smart contracts that automatically calculate the amount of funds raised, distribute new tokens once the crowd sale is complete, and govern the on-chain dynamics of the project network. As a result, the majority of ICOs have taken place via the Ethereum network, and most have involved ERC-20 tokens, which are immediately interoperable with all other tokens on the Ethereum blockchain. Between 2017 and 2018, thousands of projects conducted token sales. However, A significant portion of ICOs did not satisfy existing securities registration requirements, were flimsily constructed business operations, or were outright scams. ICOs raised $6.3 billion in the first 3 months of 2018 alone, 118% of the total funds raised during 2017. The largest ICO was conducted by Block One, the creator of EOSIO, which raised $4 billion in 2018. Messaging app Telegram conducted the second largest ICO, which netted the company $1.7 billion in 2018. Telegram sale, however, was a private sale and was limited to large investors. Web browser Brave conducted another notable ICO, raising $35 million in less than 30 seconds. While many legitimate blockchain projects used the funds from their ICOs to create established successful projects, it gradually became clear that many ICOs lacked serious teams or realistic business plans and relied on industry hype and marketing to profit off of unsophisticated investors. As a result, ICOs attracted regulatory scrutiny, most notably from the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. The SEC issued a report after investigating a 2016 token sale for the Dow that concluded that the sale was an unregistered securities offering. Some ICO issuers attempted to circumvent U.S. regulations by excluding U.S. investors from their sale. However, investors were still able to access the sales by using VPNs. The SEC eventually took action against many ICOs, including Block One, which was required to pay $24 million penalty. Likewise, Telegram was required to pay an $18.5 million penalty and to return $1.2 billion to investors. Overall, Ethereum's adoption was accelerated by the popularity of ICOs, many of which planned to build their projects on top of the Ethereum blockchain. As a result, Ethereum found widespread community support and developer interest, and its ERC-20 tokens became a widely recognized industry standard. Although the ICO boom may have passed, ICOs continue to take place. In the history of blockchain, ICOs provide one more instance of the paradigm shifts and disruptive innovations made possible by decentralized technology. So right out of the gate, there are five major problems that I have with Ethereum. One, all decisions are made by the Ethereum Foundation. It is not a decentralized cryptocurrency that cares about the input from the community. It doesn't do upgrades like Bitcoin and Bitcoin's BIP proposals. The Ethereum Foundation basically just does whatever they want. That makes it a centralized, I don't even know what to call it, because it's not a crypto. Two, they did a pre-mine of over 50 million Ethereum. 50 million. That means before anyone had the ability to go out and buy mining equipment and participate in the network just like you would with Bitcoin, the developers took it upon themselves to mine over 50 million Ethereum. Out of that 50 million Ethereum, that brings us to number three. More than 20% of the total initial supply was just given to the developers and the Ethereum Foundation. Many people will say, well, Satoshi has over a million Bitcoin or close to a million Bitcoin. Well, yes, but that's because Satoshi participated fairly in the mining process like everyone else. He did not pre-mine any Bitcoins. Four, Ethereum has always been a platform that really does nothing more than allow people to create their own coin project on top of its framework. Therefore, it opened the floodgates for thousands of scams. And five, all Ethereum-based projects, especially ones with an ICO or that are traded on exchanges, they all violate SEC securities law. The next major problem with Ethereum, within a year of Ethereum's launch, a very ambitious project called the DAO, Decentralized Autonomous Organization, came into the mix. I'm going to cite this article from CoinDesk. Ethereum, Understanding the DAO Attack. A DAO is a decentralized autonomous organization. Its goal is to codify the rules and decision-making apparatus of an organization, eliminating the need for documents and people in governing, creating structure with a decentralized control. Here's how a DAO works. A group of people writes a smart contract that will run the organization. There is an initial funding period in which people add funds to the DAO by purchasing tokens that represent ownership. This is called a crowd sale or an ICO to give it the resources it needs. When the funding period is over, the DAO begins to operate. People can then make proposals to the DAO on how to spend the money, and the members who have bought in can vote to approve these proposals. It is important to understand that great care has been taken not to make these tokens into equity shares. They are more like contributions that give people voting rights but not ownership. In most cases, a DAO is not owned by anyone. It's just software running on the Ethereum network. The very first DAO is Bitcoin itself, which is governed by consensus among its core team and its mining network. All other DAOs that have been launched on the Ethereum platform. The DAO, in quotes, is the name of a particular DAO conceived of and programmed by the team behind the German startup Slack.it, a company building smart locks that let people share their things, cars, boats, apartments, in a decentralized version of Airbnb. The DAO launched on the 30th of April 2016 with a 28-day funding window. For whatever reason, the DAO was popular, raising over $100 million by the 15th of May, and by the end of the funding period, the DAO was the largest crowdfunding event in history, having raised over $150 million from more than 11,000 enthusiastic members. The DAO raised far more money than its creators expected. It can be said that the marketing was better than the execution, for during the crowd sale, several people expressed concerns that the code was vulnerable to attack. Once the crowd sale was over, There was much discussion of first addressing the vulnerabilities before starting to fund proposals. In particular, Stephen Tuol, one of the DAO's creators, announced on 12th of June that a recursive call bug had been found in the software, but that no DAO funds were at risk. At the time, more than 50 project proposals were waiting for the DAO's token holders to vote on them. It is important to reiterate that the Ethereum network has no such bugs and has been working perfectly the entire time. All network systems are vulnerable to that kind of attack. The Ethereum network, which supports it, depending on price, around $1 billion worth of Ether, has not been hacked. The DAO hack. Unfortunately, while programmers were working on fixing this and other problems, an unknown attacker began using the approach to start draining the DAO of Ether collected from the sale of its tokens. By Saturday, the 18th of June, the attacker managed to drain more than 3.6 million Ether into a, quote, child DAO that has the same structure as the DAO. The price of Ether dropped from over $20 to under $13. Several people made an attempt to split the DAO to prevent more Ether from being taken, but they couldn't get the votes necessary in such a short time. Because the designers didn't expect this much money, all the Ether was in a single address, which is a bad idea, and we believe the attacker stopped voluntarily after hearing about the fork proposal. In fact, the attack, or another similar one, could continue at any time. Smart contracts are meant to be standalone agreements, not subject to interpretation by outside entities or jurisdiction. The code itself is meant to be the ultimate arbiter of the deal it represents, but of course, that's an idealist crypto-anarchist perspective. Even before the attack, several lawyers raised concerns about the DAO overstepped crowdfunding mandate and ran afoul of securities laws in several countries. Lawyers also pointed to its creators as potentially liable for any problems that may occur, and several expressed concern that the token holders of the DAO were accepting responsibility they were likely unaware of. The DAO exists in a gray area of law and regulation. So within a year of Ethereum's launch, a very ambitious project called the DAO, a decentralized autonomous organization, is launched, raises over $100 million, but because of the flawed nature of smart contracts, a bug was found and the exploit was exploited. This caused a fundamental identity crisis in Ethereum, which caused the developers to take a very drastic step, which we will talk about next.
Ethereum and Ethereum Classic is a case study of a hard fork. The DAO plan builds a crowdfunding platform based on Ethereum smart contracts. It was officially released in May 2016 and ended in June of that year. Raised more than $160 million. Afterwards, the DAO was exploited by hackers to exploit loopholes in smart contracts, transferred $50 million worth of Ethereum. In order to save the investors' assets, the Ethereum community voted to alter the Ethereum code, hoping to recover funds. For this reason, Ethereum hard forked at block 199,000. The fork rolled back the Ethereum transactions, including the hackers. However, some people believe that this violated the decentralized and immutable feature of the blockchain and insisted on mining on the original chain, thus forming two chains, a chain that does not recognize the transactions that were rolled back, ETC, and a chain that recognizes rolled back transactions, ETH. Each represents a different community consensus and values. The person holding an Ether at the fork holds both ETH and ETC after the fork.
So, after putting out a completely subpar, quote, cryptocurrency and having executed on it a beyond subpar smart contract that then got hacked, the Ethereum founders, including Vitalik and the Ethereum Foundation, thought it would be a good idea to simply roll the chain back, do a hard fork, and make the immutable blockchain that can never be changed mutable. This is the most egregious violation of all principles of cryptocurrency that the world has ever seen and will ever see. I'm going to go ahead and cite CoinDesk once again. Ethereum executes blockchain hard fork to return DAO funds. The much-anticipated hard fork of the Ethereum blockchain has been implemented, giving those building on the decentralized application network at least the potential for stability after weeks of controversy and sometimes terse disagreements in the wider community. At approximately 1430 UTC today, China-based Ethereum miner BW.com mined the Ethereum blockchain's 192,000th block. Seconds later, the mining pool also mined the first block on the new blockchain, which returned funds lost in the collapse of the DAO to an account available to its original investors. The achievement, which returns approximately $40 million worth of Ether from an account owned by an unknown hacker to a new address, is being met with celebration by many members of the Ethereum community. However, the actual implications of the decision, which essentially showed that a supposedly immutable blockchain history can be altered, is yet to be seen. So the one thing that you just don't do, because you're not supposed to be able to do it in cryptocurrency, because cryptocurrency is a distributed ledger. It's decentralized. There is no central body to make a decision to roll back a chain. But yet, Ethereum and the Ethereum Foundation and Vitalik Buterin made the decision to violate every principle they claim to stand for and roll back the chain to take back the money that was stolen from them because of their own poor implementation of the smart contract code. The overwhelming hypocrisy cannot be understated. Despite the fact that the entire world knew the Ethereum blockchain was rolled back, in 2019, Vitalik Buterin came forward and gaslit the entire crypto community by stating that the Ethereum network was not rolled back after the DAO hack. Vitalik called this a surgical intervention that did not roll back general transactions. Quote, "We haven't rolled back the chain. We've intervened in state. There's a difference. The former implies that innocent users' transactions that happened to be at the same time got rolled back with the DAO hacker, which did not happen." And that's from Vitalik on October 28, 2019. Once again, Vitalik completely misses the point of cryptocurrency and immutability. And for these reasons, Ethereum is nothing more than centralized garbage.
Yeah, the fact is that Bitcoin is kind of taking market away from gold. It's taking market away from fiat money. It also takes market away from the so-called altcoins. And I guess the second biggest coin, or one of the biggest altcoins out there, would be Ethereum. And you've written a piece for Casey Research, quote, "A Rube Goldberg of buzzwords."